thank you. It's really an honor and really helpful to be invited to speak on this panel and to think about my organizing work within the context of the rest of the work being done by everyone on this panel. I'd like to acknowledge we're on unceded Coast Salish, Sableteuth, Musqueam, Burrard, the Squamish territories, and that it's a really appropriate way to think about that there is no really is no local or international. There is every space that we're in, especially the 125th birthday of Vancouver, is something that is produced through it is a local space that is produced with international forces of imperialism. And it's hard to, so my name's Ivan Drury, and I'm an organizer with the Downtown Eastside Neighborhood Council and the Carnegie Community Action Project. Means I do anti-gentrification organizing. In the Downtown East Side of Vancouver. Maybe we should just listen to that song. and it's hard, but I'm at the on the tail end of a 3-month long campaign organizing around a proposal from City Council to increase the building heights in Chinatown, which is really a blatant gentrification drive, a drive to replace a low income community with a high income community. And transform spaces that are that have affordable housing in them into spaces that are exclusively or almost exclusively expensive condos. It's hard to generalize that work and to think about what that means as far as international forces because it's so present all the time, because it's something we work on like every day, so you get caught in all the details of what this city councilor said, what this motion from City Hall said. And all of these things are very legislated and appear very economic. And so this is an opportunity, I thought, to step back a bit and think about it in terms of the ways that people's identities are created by these processes, the ways that who belongs in the city and who's excluded from the city is produced by these processes, and what this means on an international level. So basically, as I was sketching this out, I was thinking about some of the talks about Pakistan and about Egypt and Mexico and about the unceded territories to the north, outside of the city, which is kind of its own special space. And I thought gentrification on an urban sphere is imperialism. Now, I need to explain for a second how I think that works. There is a concept in Marxist political economy called primitive accumulation, that the way that capitalism starts is by capitalists forming themselves by stealing a whole bunch of stuff and getting everything they need in order to build a dominating system. So they go to poor people's territories and steal everything, and they build machines, and those machines, then they hire workers in order to run the machines. But first they have to undertake this great theft of things in order to build that foundation. So Marx called that primitive accumulation, and some of that primitive speaks to his like idea that there is a beginning and an end to history. I think people have added to that recently and said that especially in settler societies, white settler societies like Canada, primitive accumulation is permanent, and that the capitalist system constantly steals land that is unceded, constantly steals resources that are not theirs, and constantly converts them into money, or converts them into commodities that can be exchanged for money, or into machines that can produce money. And we can see from the explanations about what's happening with the Enbridge pipeline and with other mining projects that this is happening constantly in BC. On unceded territory, the state pretends that it has legitimate rule over all of this land, and it steals in order to produce more Canadian capitalism. It's a bit easy to see it in that context if we just think that, okay, Canada's not legitimate, we think about it as colonialism, and that we see the colonialism is ongoing. It's not a finished story. So we constantly are reproducing what colonialism is and what a colonial society is by participating in this constant, permanent, primitive accumulation, or accumulation by dispossession or theft. It's a bit harder to see it how it works within an urban space, because they're not just knocking down new trees or digging holes and pulling minerals out. They're moving buildings around, or they're knocking down buildings and building new ones. But I think it's important to think about gentrification within the urban space as not just happening through material things like it, or natural things, or the earth like trees and water and minerals or mountains, but to think about it as well as how communities are moved and how communities are converted. Because the driving ideology of this primitive accumulation on the sphere of stealing material things and turning them into money, these dominating ideologies, we know them. They're things like white man's burden, the idea that there are beginnings and ends in histories and that primitive, so-called primitive people need to be lifted up into civilization, that this is a great gift. Gentrification or imperialism within the city, the great ideology of that is social mix, that poor people need middle-class people to teach them how to behave. To use a metaphor that Jean Swanson, an organizer with the Carnegie Community Action Project, used yesterday, she said social mix is the idea that poor people won't pee on the street if there's a Bentley parked on the sidewalk. that poor people are ashamed to behave badly if there's middle-class people around to show them how to behave correctly. This is consistent with the idea that a lot of feminist scholars have brought to the questions of imperialism as not just economic forces, but also cultural forces, and the question that imperialism is something that gets into our heads. So the question of fighting against imperialism and against colonialism and against capitalism is also how to get these things out of our heads. Because these systems produce people, not just spaces. And they produce people by saying what a proper person is within a proper space. So 125 years ago in Vancouver, Vancouver was produced not just by making a city out of a wilderness, as the legends go, but also by saying what a proper man was in the city. And it was a man. So there was a real regimen that you had to be white, you had to be a man, you had to have a normal sexuality, meaning you had to want to be married, maybe cheat on your wife sometimes, but... but that ultimately you had to play with these rules of what a normal person was within the city. And that person was produced, that idea of what a proper person was produced just as much by imperialism as the space itself was. And today, these productions are happening as well. So I think that the thing is that gentrification is imperialism in the city because the communities of low-income people are stolen and dispossessed and converted into capital, which is known as condos. So low-income housing is smashed and converted into condos. And as that happens, the mixed and diverse and beautiful identities of low-income people who are the most racially mixed up and the most sexually mixed up and the most gender mixed up and challenging communities of people in the whole country, these communities are smashed and reproduced as Vancouverites, as the people who live in a livable city, as people who can buy their identities in the city. So this has turned out in these days as this most recent example that I'm going to talk about is how this worked in the plan to build condo towers in Chinatown. It was a 3-year-long struggle that started with a plan from the planners at City Hall to build 30-story condo towers throughout Chinatown. And last year in January 2010, there was a big coalition of people who fought against it, including the clan associations and the family associations in Chinatown that also said they didn't want it because it would destroy the historic buildings in Chinatown. City Council sent that away, and it came back at the end of last year as a new plan to increase the building heights to 15 stories in all of the downtown east side. Now, this time, the clan associations and the family associations weren't so concerned with that plan. But the low-income community organized, and they brought on a whole bunch of middle-class people also joined that coalition and fought to stop them from building 15-story towers throughout the downtown east side because everyone knew that that would mean that there would be a lot of people made homeless, that a lot of the hotels where low-income people lived would be destroyed, converted into tourist places or places for students, and that a lot of people would be made homeless. On January 20th, City Council broke before the pressure from that coalition, and they broke that proposal in two. And they whittled it down one more time to say, okay, we're not going to raise the heights in all of the downtown east side. We're just going to raise them in Chinatown. And the clan associations and the family associations in Chinatown were on the forefront of calling for this plan because they figured they'd get about $40,000 to renovate their historic buildings along Pender Street and that the rest of Chinatown, Chinatown South, where low-income people live and where low-income shops are, but that there's not many historic buildings, that space could be transformed into 12 and 15-story condo towers. So basically the coalition was reduced then to almost entirely the low-income community. And 37 organizations that are involved in the Downtown East Side signed a statement opposing this plan and organized for 3 months, organized meetings at all of the housing projects and door-knocked at all the housing projects and met with Chinese seniors and involved Chinese seniors in the struggle who live in the area, because 60% of Chinatown is low-income. About 1,000 people who are low-income live in Chinatown. And there's more than 500 private social housing rooms, or not social housing, private affordable housing rooms that are market in Chinatown. So hotels that are owned by real estate people, speculators. But through all this, the city council was very conscious to insist who Chinatown was. And they said that Chinatown was not those people who didn't want the condos there. They said that Chinatown was this very specific identity. And like in the other forms of imperialism, this identity was very specifically racially identified, as Chinese, very specifically class identified as rich, and very specifically gender identified as male. And according to these people, even the Chinese senior women who lived in Chinatown are outsiders who were not allowed to speak about this issue, because Chinatown was unanimous. They said over and over again in the 5 public hearings, Chinatown is unanimous. Even when Chinese women who live in the in Solheim Place on Union Street in the center of Chinatown came forward and spoke against the towers, they said, you must have been tricked, because Chinatown is unanimous. It's important, this struggle, to identify it not just a struggle for the low-income community in the Downtown East Side, but to think about it as imperialism on an urban scale or on a local scale, because we need to understand what we're up against. On the second last day of the hearings, one of the men who was speaking in favor of the tower's plan to increase the heights in Chinatown and replace the housing with condo towers said, "The Downtown East Side is not so bad. It's humans who make it that way." And Councillor Zhang and Louis accused the people who were speaking against the towers as being outsiders who were trying to meddle in the affairs of Chinatown. But the thing is that this is the story that's being pushed by City Council. And if we see it as just something that's happening in Vancouver, it's easy to get overwhelmed by that. But it's actually a global process. And the city's power to implement these legislative changes that they're probably going to pass tomorrow at their city council meeting, the same time as they vote on the casino and some other things, it only has so much weight as people allow it. So the example that we can take from the territories to the north and from Mexico and from Pakistan and from Egypt, people have evoked Little Tunisia and when they've talked about, and they've talked up at City Council and said, you're going to make the Downtown East Side into a Little Tunisia. More than one person said this. And the thing is that it's true. Because their power to increase building heights is dependent on the ability to sell condos. And the reason they have to increase building heights to sell condos is because the developers consider the Downtown East Side to be a high-risk area for building condos. Yesterday we had someone come from New York speaking about, spoke about the anti-gentrification movement there. He said that a popular slogan in the anti-gentrification movement at Tompkins Square was, "Die, yuppie scum." And we know that the yuppies are sensitive to such rhetoric. We know because Dave Dewart put together this report called Zones of Exclusion. It was all he did, and with a number of other people, was make a map of those businesses and stores in Chinatown that exclude poor people and said, these places exclude poor people. And it was put up on the internet, and we printed 50 copies of it and distributed it. And I got an email from someone who is a property owner in Strathcona who said, there's a reason that respectable people in Strathcona are scared of you guys. He said, it's because the Zones of Exclusion report is inciting fear and hatred against mostly honest business people. Gentrification, like all forms of imperialism, is violence. But it's a violence that is totally normalized and hidden by legislation and by hegemonic domination of society. It's not the kind that is visible, because the people who have the violence acted against them are the most silenced and the most oppressed in society. So one way we can fight these towers is to help this become a little bit more visible by explaining it as it actually is, economic and political violence, and that violence that is carried out by private security guards and cops in the last instance as well. So we need to continue to build our beautiful coalition and build alliances. The Downtown Eastside Neighborhood Council should not be an organization by itself in the neighborhood, and we are not. We are working more and more with other organizations that are active in the Downtown Eastside, and we need to, in the years that come, foster those relationships outside of the neighborhood too. And I understand the fight against gentrification as a citywide fight, as a province-wide fight, as a so-called nationwide fight, and an international fight against imperialism. Thank you. Vancouver.mediacoop.ca